Check out my newly renamed podcast, Democracy on Fire with Kay Brown, where we'll discuss the ongoing conflict with Iran and its implications for our economy, security, and upcoming elections. Hope to see you there. Democracy on Fire on United America Network.
Welcome to Hotspots on the United America Network. From the shifting landscapes of politics and culture to the urgent challenges facing our planet and our communities, this is where the conversations that matter most come alive. With her experience as a journalist, legislator, and activist, Kay Brown brings sharp insight, uplifting perspective, and unflinching courage to the issues shaping our future. Get ready for candid conversations, bold ideas, and the pushback our times demand. Now, here's Kay.
Hello, and welcome to Hotspots. As you are probably sensing and experiencing, the resistance is here, growing and gaining momentum as disturbing events continue. Today, we're going to explore a bit about how the arts, and especially music, fuel the resistance, give us hope and joy, keep us grounded, move us to action. I'm a believer that it's important to keep a joyful perspective as we contemplate what we can do. Laughter in the face of fascism is, well, better than capitulation. We'll be discussing how to have difficult dialogues across divides that separate us. How do we talk to our friends and family members with radically different perspectives? I'm so pleased to welcome my guest today, singer-songwriter Libby Roderick, a person I've long greatly admired. Libby is an internationally recognized award-winning singer and songwriter and recording artist whose music has been featured on CNN, CBS, at the UN conference in Beijing, at the MS Foundation, the World Wilderness Congress, by the AP, and many other forums. She's performed alongside Coretta Scott King and Walter Cronkite, opened for Grammy Award-winning artists, appeared at colleges, universities, conferences, and folk venues throughout North America. She's even had her music played on Mars by NASA. Her 7 recordings have received worldwide airplay, and her essays, poems, and songs have appeared in numerous movies, books, and publications. She's a Rasmussen Individual Artist Fellow and a lifelong Alaskan, where she got her BA in American Studies from Yale, and her MA in Social Psychology from Alaska Pacific University. And Libby served for 20 years as director of Difficult Dialogues, an initiative at the University of Alaska Anchorage, and she co-founded the Difficult Dialogues National Resource Center. She's an editor and co-author of multiple books and articles on difficult dialogues, Indigenous ways of teaching, learning, and knowing, and best practices for ending toxic behavior in the workplace. She works with faculty and community groups throughout the United States and South Africa. Thank you so much for joining me, Libby. I'm really honored that you're here.
Happy to be here. You're one of my heroes, too.
Tell me a little bit about how you got started writing songs, and particularly protest songs. And especially the song that most recently came to mind for me in experiencing what we're going through is Dancing in Front of the Guns.
Well, the answer to questions about my career path is accidental and not the purpose kind of stuff. I started writing music because somebody in Alaska had heard me singing in a car or something, and asked if I would sing for a rally against violence against women and children in downtown Anchorage in the early 80s. And as I think I've maybe told you before, I shook uncontrollably for 3 straight days. I was absolutely terrified to do this, but thankfully I said yes, I would do it. Got up, survived the rallies, sang my songs, and on the strength of that was asked to if I would form a little band with some people to open for an artist who is touring on behalf of the nuclear freeze. We opened for the artist. We only knew 2 songs. So when we were asked to come back for an encore, we didn't come on stage. And the artist said, "Get your act together, women." It was a group of women. which we did, and we came a little a cappella acoustic band called Voices, and we toured around Alaska for quite a while on behalf of nonprofit causes in the state. And as part of that, one of the other women in the band said, hey, we should write our own music. And I literally spun across the room and said, no way, get away from me. I will not do this. This is my MO, obviously. And then stayed up all night and wrote my first song. And brought it out to my bandmates thinking they were going to hate the song. They didn't hate the song. So I thought, oh, wow, okay, this is interesting. And what's true is people, I think, artists of all kind, but people recognize a form, right? I couldn't write a novel to save my life. But when I wrote a song, it was like, get this, I'd get this. And I think it's because my extended family, even though as a born and raised Alaskan, we almost never saw each other, has musicians in our lineage, right? And so somehow I think I just recognized the form. So anyways, I started writing songs. And in terms of, and then it went on from there in terms of recordings and so on. But in terms of protest songs, myself and other people, I think, you know, when you look at the body of protest songs in the world, and we can speak more about the force of music in particular, but also art to really bolster social change movements. I write it because of something happening, right? You know, something is happening that is unjust or is dangerous to life on the planet. And so I'm sparked to respond to that the way I respond to the world, which is to write a song. When I've been asked before, that is how I move through the world, how I kind of metabolize the wildness of being on this planet, right? Which is a pretty wild experience, let's face it. That's my way of doing it. And so in terms of the specific song that you mentioned, Dancing in Front of the Guns, it was in, I'm going to say 1991. I'm going to get it wrong, probably. I'm not the best on those kind of details, but I'm pretty sure it was George H.W. Bush who was planning to bomb Iraq on, I think, very faulty information and was literally doing a countdown. Some of you will remember this. They were literally counting down 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, the days leading to bombing a group of other human beings on the other side of the planet if they didn't do what we wanted them to do. And somebody in Alaska, somebody in Anchorage, called for another rally in downtown Anchorage, a very familiar spot for me, and asked if I would come sing at the rally. And so I started, as I do, foraging around for, well, what songs make sense in this moment? And I couldn't find any. And so my response to that was to write one. And that is the song that came out. And the intention behind the song is what you said at the introduction, that part of the resistance, part of what, I've been a climate activist my whole life, right? Talk about not fun. Right, in terms of an issue. And that we must have joy to keep going. I mean, plus we must have joy. That's what we're doing on the planet. You know, that's what we're all trying to have on the planet anyway. So we can't let that go just because we're being smashed by these forces. In fact, we need more of it. And, you know, everybody knows probably the statement by Emma Goldman, the fabulous, you know, revolutionary, saying, if I can't dance, I don't want to be part of your revolution. I was so pleased when I'm pretty sure it was Indivisible, could have been Move On, some of the groups that are organizing the resistance these days to protect democracy and life on Earth, when they called it, we are in joyful resistance. And most of the gatherings that I have gone to, and I've gone to and sung at a bunch of them in Alaska and other places, people are being as joyful as they can together, right? That we are here to protect love, to protect joy, to protect possibilities, to protect our children, to protect our rivers, right? To protect our democracy. And that comes from a place of love. So anyway, the song was written to basically say, I'm scared, you're scared, we're all scared. Everybody, this is scary. But when I really look at it and I think, what am I doing here for the short time I get to be on the planet? And you would recognize this as a former Alaskan. People leave all the time. I've grown up in a state where people die a lot, you know, in car crashes, air crashes, boat crashes, you know, ice gets them, whatever, avalanches. If I'm going to be here as short a time as I am, I'm gonna have the courage to hold your hand with hundreds of millions of other people who care and have some fun while we're at it, while we stand up for what we believe in.
Well, that song just really hit me in particular after the recent murders that we experienced in Minneapolis. And so we'll play it at the end of the podcast, and hopefully it'll be inspiration to others to have courage, as you said. So with all of these really disturbing and alarming actions that we see from our leaders now, how do you feel about the state of affairs in our country right now? And are these developments inspiring any new songs?
I think I feel like most people that I know who have not shut down or disengaged or been disinformed wildly by Fox News and a million other sources of disinformation that are out there, I'm horrified. Right? On a daily basis, I wake up. Somebody called it rational existential dread, I think. You know, it's horrific. I don't think we've ever seen, well, we know for a fact that here's, ironically, we're celebrating 250 years of our punitive democracy. And people are spreading it wildly from the inside. They're lying to us. They're killing people. They're sanctioning violence. They're promoting white Christian nationalism. You know, it's, and yeah. So I don't think I need to say more. I imagine most of your listeners feel the same. It's beyond shocking. I'm often speechless. Just this morning, I saw another piece of news and said to my partner, I'm like, you know, is this for real? Could this possibly be for real? And he's like, I'm afraid it is, right? So I think we all know that. And I do hope people know that it's not them, right? If you're feeling terror right now, if you're feeling anxious right now, if you're feeling despair right now, if you're feeling sad, if you're feeling outrage, this is a normal response to what's occurring. This is not an issue of yours, right? And if there's any question about that, please, please, please join a group, right? I do like the statement, something like, to turn illness into wellness, you turn I into we, right? The most important thing you can do these days is join a group of like-minded people and take action together. So in terms of writing new music, some of it is, I'm mostly kind of resurrecting. I wrote when John Lewis died, songs poured out of my body because John Lewis, the great late civil rights leader who was a congressman who worked extensively with Martin Luther King and was unbelievably brave in the face of unbelievable oppression. He basically writes the songs for me because the way he talked. But so I'm bringing up a bunch of songs that I wrote about him or inspired by him, and also some new songs. But tomorrow, even, I'm meeting with an Indivisible group here in California and doing protest songs with them, mine and others, and teaching them how to do them. And we're going to help them develop new chants for their marches and stuff. And so one of the things I'm doing is, as many people are doing, is rewriting the words to existing protest songs. In this case, which side are you on, friends? Which side are you on? You know, that's an old union labor song. And I'm going to encourage them to do the same so that when they're marching and when we're at these vigils and when we're, you know, at a rally, people have developed their own lyrics to keep these things going. So what you do with a protest song, which probably everybody knows, is try to make it easy, right? For, you got 1,000 people, you don't want them to have to get complicated lyrics. So I'm trying to teach them how to sort of make some pretty simple, straightforward lyrics using existing melodies so they don't have to make up an entirely new song.
Well, that sounds great. Be looking forward to learning those new songs. We sure need that. That's such an important part of a successful resistance, is how we form those thoughts and how that unites people in the ability to share that, share music. As I mentioned in the introduction, you have a lot of experience working with people to mediate difficult conversations. In this environment we're in now, so polarized, is it really possible for people to come together? How has the current political environment affected your thinking about difficult dialogues?
Sure. Well, it's gotten harder and harder, let's just say it. You know, I started doing the work back in 2005 after 9/11. The Ford Foundation was calling on people all across higher ed to come up with ways to up our capacities in higher education in particular, to have conversations across difference. And that was because they were noticing after 9/11 that there was these schisms in terms of racial and religious tensions on campuses and so forth. And there was a lot of pressure on professors not to teach certain things and so forth and so on. It's only gotten wilder, obviously, since then, right? So here's how I think about it. I think we have to talk to each other, right? If we do not, we are, I used to always say, there's only a certain number of mechanisms in a democracy or in any country that you have. You can vote, you can strike, you can protest, you can, you know, do various things, dialogue. And if you, if those fail, you get to violence. And I know people are worried, correctly, that we are heading that direction. And one of the things that will help prevent that is, to the extent that we can, speaking with people with whom we disagree. Now, there are a lot of caveats to that. I do not ask people, for example, who are under a targeted oppression to feel that they must listen to people who are oppressing them, right? I mean, there are definitely borders on this. But the way I always thought about it is this, is that when I'm trying to change an institution, a government, a corporation, you know, a larger institution, I don't necessarily try to dialogue. I mean, I can start with there, but if they are unwilling to do that, then we apply pressure. That's when we do boycotts. That's when we do strikes. That's when we take actions, you know, that put pressure. That's when we send millions of messages to our senators and our congresspeople to get them to realize what we need them to do. I don't spend my time trying to reach for them necessarily personally. But one-on-one, when we're talking about your aunt, your neighbor, your teacher, your, you know, student, your child, your parent, I have a different philosophy. I am pretty willing for a very long time with most people to reach for them on a one-on-one basis or on a family basis. And so the best work that I know of, if people haven't heard in this regard, there's been quite a number of organizations spring up recently in the last, I'd say, 10 years, recognizing an increasingly desperate need for dialogue. And you can Google and find a bunch of them. Like I mentioned, I co-founded the one that's focused on higher ed, the Difficult Dialogues National Resource Center. But there are a lot of them. And one of them that I feel very positively about is Braver Angels. You've probably heard of it. Many people have probably heard of it. It's a group that exists specifically on the belief that if we cannot speak to each other in a democracy, we are toast. And that there's actually a much greater common ground between most Americans and most Americans than social media and the way we are interacting now in terms of our media would let you believe. Social media is a terrible place to find common ground, right? People are just snarking at each other and criticizing each other and sending out, you know, sensational stories and so forth and so on. Braver Angels has online seminars. It has ways to depolarize yourself. It has trainings on if your family is split politically, how to move in that space. It has what they call debates, but they're not debates in the usual, I'm going to crush you title of debate. They are actually where they bring in people who lean in different directions, ordinary people who get to speak why they believe what they believe, and it goes through a moderator, etc. They're affordable or free. So I say this because I think that people, when people come together like that and really listen to other people, there is a much bigger middle ground in America, I believe, than we are led to believe currently by the way things get covered. And I think it is essential that we at least try to understand each other. And the complicating fact, I think, I mean, there's always been differences. I grew up in Alaska. My father was the head of the Democratic Party. He was best friends with the majority whip in the Republican Senate, Tent Stevens, right? They didn't agree on how to do most things, but they did agree on a lot of things, like, for example, protecting the rule of law, for example, due process, for example, First Amendment, for example, right? The basics of democracy, they did not differ on this. They differed on how to make that happen. So I'm talking too much here and kind of getting a little bit lost, but I do think that we need to listen to each other because we have different priorities. Like some people believe that freedom of speech is the first priority. Other people might believe it's the third priority, and they're willing to sacrifice some of that for a different priority. That doesn't make them evil people, right? We are always going to disagree on things. But at this moment, we need to find some way to undemonize each other. I'm a pretty strong believer in that. I can say more about process, but.
Well, it is a challenge. And I know people all the time are running into this, how do I relate to people that seem to, you know, have radically different ideas and approaches. But thank you for the suggestions of how we can think about that and where more resources are to help people who are struggling with that. And then we're going to have to leave it here, but we'll
end
with...
Sure. Think about other people through the lens of potential disinformation. A lot of people are coming into the conversation thinking what is happening in reality is completely different than what I think is happening. And we can give each other a little grace when you realize that they're being fed a lot of disinformation, right? They're good people who genuinely think that X is happening when we may know differently, right? That helps me at least come from a starting point of calming down.
All right. Well, calmness in the face of what's going on is something we all probably want to achieve. And we're going to have to leave it here, Libby. Thank you so much for sharing your talent and your insights. And we'll end with your song, Dancing in Front of the Guns. But just want to say to the audience, stay strong, keep laughing, singing, and dancing as those opportunities come up. Hope to see you next time on Hotspots.
We're facing the guns again. We have faced them before. Humanity's longing after so many deaths, something more human than war. A part of me whispers, take your body and run away with. Leave the vision to somebody else, and I hear myself say, but I'd rather be dancing at the edge of my grave. I'd rather be holding you close as we march forward, loving and brave. I'd rather be singing in the face of my fear. I'd rather be dancing in front of the guns as long as I'm here. Life is so dangerous that there's little fear. Life is so positive. Dancing the whole human race, each one must choose. And I'd rather be dancing at the edge of my grave. I'd rather be holding you close as we march forward, loving and brave. I'd rather be singing in the face of my fear. I'd rather be dancing in front of the guns. As long as I'm here. Millions of lovers urging me on as we take to the streets. As we face the terror, if I leave here before my time, one thing's for certain, I'll go down.
I'd rather be dancing in front of the guns as long as I am here. Dance with me as long as I'm here.
You've been listening to Hot Spots with Kay Brown, where tough issues meet thoughtful conversation. Stay engaged, stay inspired, and join us again as we spotlight the struggles, solutions, and stories that fuel resilience and change. Until next time, keep your fire burning. Hot Spots is a production of the United America Network and is available on most major podcast platforms, as well as from UnitedAmericaNetwork.com. This is what democracy sounds and looks like.
If you've had enough and want to wake up our recalcitrant Congress, join me on Democracy on Fire with Kay Brown for the top 23 reasons we need regime change now. Hope to see you there, Democracy on Fire on United America Network.